Okay, we are continuing the Nefesh HaChaim. This is our 11th class. We're on Perek Tes, chapter 9, page Lamed Aleph. We are in the midst, and we will conclude the question tonight. All right, well, for sure. Reb Chaim started a couple chapters ago, just to refresh, the beginning of chapter 8, discussing the argument between the two rabbis as to where the cherubim were placed in the temple of King Solomon. As there were two contradictory verses, one verse said that the cherubim were facing each other, another verse was saying the cherubim were facing the wall of the temple and not facing each other. So one rabbi said that we resolved the contradiction by saying that when the Jewish people were doing the will of God, the cherubim were facing each other. And that's indeed how King Solomon set up the cherubim. But when the Jewish people would not do the will of God, then that other verse was operative and the cherubim would not face each other. The other rabbi, though, says no. He says we synthesized the two interpretations, and at the same time they were looking at each other and looking at the walls, meaning to say they were at a slight angle and they weren't facing each other. And the question that was asked was, why would the second rabbi opt out to say that they set up the temple in a way in which the cherubic-like figures were not facing each other directly? You'd want to do it in the optimal measure. We remember that question, right? That was the question we were trying to come back to. And then we went off into a beautiful side point of the argument with Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai as to how to resolve the two contradictory verses of the words of the Torah shall not depart from your mouth, and the other verse that says you should will harvest your grain. And we discussed the two opinions there, that of Rabbi Yishmael, who says you synthesize the two, Torah with a work ethic, and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who said, when we do the will of God, you will be able to learn Torah all the time. If you don't do the will of God, then you'll have to work. And we gave Reb Chaim's explanations to that. That Rabbi Shmuel never meant to say that you should stop learning Torah, but meaning to say while you work, you should also be engaged in studying Torah. Shimon bar Yochai had a higher ethic that one should never be involved in work. And I don't know how far we went with this. I know we didn't wrap it up totally because I wanted to finish the next paragraph. But then we resolved many problems within the text of the Shema, the singulars, the plurals, all those other things. We resolved all those things. And then we discussed how the cherubim, one was reflecting the Jewish people, the other reflecting the Almighty. And it was a miraculous experience that as the Jews were facing towards God and we felt a close relationship to God, the cherubic-like figures would reflect that relationship. And if not, not. And that's basically how we ended chapter 8. Okay? So we'll do the whole chapter 9, and then we'll take questions. I didn't, allow enough question time. And there's a few ideas we have to still express and to give closure to the whole idea. So that's where we're up to. Chapter 9. So now he's going to answer the question, why did the second rabbi say that the cherubim were made in a way that they don't face each other straight on? That's what we had to understand. So it says like this. Page Lamed Aleph. V'hine Dor HaMidbor, the generation of the Jews who were in the desert when they went out of Egypt, to whom they, Moses, clearly he set the cherubim facing each other. There's no debate about that. That generation, Shezachu Lios Me Ochle Shulchan Kavoa, they merited to be such a caliber of people who were literally eating off of the table from high. They're eating off of God's table. Lecha min hashamayim, bread from the heavens, tvar yom biyomo, daily basis. You know, you're invited over to a friend for a week, you know. You don't say to the friend, since I'm eating by you for a week, send over a delivery of a week's worth of food. I mean, you don't do that. I mean, you're eating at his table. You're eating at his table, you're going to get the food. I mean, there's no question about it. Every day he's going to give you food. So the eating of the manna, it signified more than just eating food and staying alive, right? It signified that we were invited in to God's table. And more than the invitation, the food, was the fact that there was a tremendous relationship developed between us and the Almighty. That's what it means. You're eating manna from God every day. That's the deepest implications of that. And their clothes did not wear out. It was a miraculous existence. They didn't have to work for a living. So then, Ledivra Kol, according to everybody, there's no argument there. Lomikru Osim Ritzona Shomakum, they would not be called doing the will of God. Elam Kain, unless what kind of behavior did they display? Hayumistaklim Klape Mala Biyoshigamar. Unless they were looking to God constantly. There's no other way for such people to say they'd be doing the will of God unless they were totally focused on God 24 hours a day. God was giving them everything. And they would dedicate their hearts only to Torah and His service. And fear of the Almighty. Yomam v'layla, day and night, lo yomush b'pihim, would not cease from their lips. Dvarim kichsav mamash, exactly like the text in Joshua would say. That's what the expectation should be. Not to turn off in any direction. Not for a moment for Parnasa. If you had such a lifestyle where God was feeding you every day and your clothes didn't wear out, we also know that they never went to the bathroom once in 40 years because the food had no waste. Okay, it was such an existence. You had clouds of glory protecting you. What do you have to go get a living for? Anything less than total dedication to God would be less than the will of God. And certainly, belinotos alatzad klal. They shouldn't, I said that. K'mamor m'zal, as our rabbi said, lo nitna Torah el aloch le'mon. Really, the truth of the matter is Torah was given truly to those who eat the manna. So therefore, how are they going to set up the cherubic-like figures? L'chein hamidu asakruvim l'fimashor yosim r'tzono shel mokom. They'd have to set up the cherubim in a way to describe how the Jews were doing the will of God, Pneiim Yishalachiv Mamish, facing each other literally. Laharas to show Ki Yasher Yechazu Pneiim Yizbarach Panim Befanim Im Am Kedosho, to describe the fact how the Jewish people's faces were directed straight to God in a straight on relationship. That's for sure, no question about it. Fine. Amnam, however. Bimei Shlomo, in the days when King Solomon reigned, Shahayu Klal Hamon Yisrael, Tzruchim Umichrochim Lin Tois Ma'at Al Hatzad Leisek HaParnasa, where in those times the Jewish people were forced to at least a little bit spend some time making a living, Al Kol Panim Kedei Chayei Nefesh, at least enough to subsist on. Shezeikur Amitas Ritzona Yisbarach, that this is the truest ultimate will of the Almighty, Ladas Rabbi Yishmael, according to Rabbi Yishmael, who says you synthesize the two ideas, Torah with work, the Sarva that he holds, Dilarabim Tvei Orech Lamebid Hachi, it's better for the masses to conduct themselves that way. Ukumosha Omer Ba'avos, as it says in Pirkei Avot, Yafet Talmud Torah Im Derech Eretz, that it is good to study Torah with some type of livelihood. And the Mishnah says, V'chol Torah Sheni Mamalacha, and any Torah that has no work at the end will cease to exist. That's what the Mishnah says. V'chol Mile Da'avos, and all the words in the chapters of our fathers, Mile De'chassidus Nino, they are words for one to conduct himself with piety. Right? So that is certainly, you know, if the rabbis in Pirkei Avos say to live this way, this is the way to live. Torah with a living. And also, rak, but, shegam ve'es oskim beparnasa, even at the time that they're working, as he said last week, ye libam noheg bechachma behiru divrei Torah, that their hearts should be conducting themselves constantly with the wisdom and the thoughts of the words of Torah, even at the time when they work, according to Rabbi Shmuel. And if that's the way the masses should conduct themselves, and this is certainly the way they had to live during King Solomon's time, King Solomon's time, they didn't have manna. They didn't have clothes that always fit them. They had to go out and make a living. They had to at least conform to the dictates of how Rabbi Yishmael understands what God wants from people. Lachain, therefore, hemidu az bitchila sakruvim, therefore, when they put the cherubim up, how did they set them up? L'fimashi osim ratzon shomakum, in the way that depicts the will of God, which is what? Pneiim mitzudadim ma'at. that the faces were turned a little bit away from God. Because the truth is, they couldn't be 100% focused on God because they had to be involved with work a little bit. It wasn't like they weren't looking at God, but it wasn't a direct, right on, eyeball to eyeball. Okay, it was eyeball to cheekbone, whatever. But it couldn't be 100% because they had to work a little bit. And this is the way we should conduct ourselves. See, that's why Mishnah Sinai Ryan and Tanakh Gemara Brachas. To know what is the way God wants us to act. And the majority is like Rabbi Shmuel. The majority is God wants you to work together with your Torah. And while you're working, you're thinking about Torah. Fine. But it's still not the same as if somebody in yeshiva is studying all day long. So therefore, it's a little bit veering off to the side. But don't think that's bad, because the im calls that still at all, ma'urim kimar ishu loyos. They still were looking almost as a human embrace. They were still facing towards each other. They were looking towards each other. Just as it was 100%, you could say it was like a hug, cheek to cheek. You know, instead of a kiss, lips to lips. You know what I'm saying? So it's still, a closeness is there, but right on, it's not right on. The funim shel chibur, there were still faces of love. Laharos chibasi yisbarach etzleinu, to show the love the Almighty has to us. Shezaika ritzoni yisbarach kanal, that this is the main will of the Almighty, kanal kenisker leil, as we mentioned before. V'sover k'Rabbi Yishmael, this rabbi holds like Rabbi Yishmael. That's one holy Rabbi Yishmael. The other one, uman damer shagam b'kruv yishlom amidu t'chilu fimashi yoysim etzene shalmakam, name Isha l'achiv mamesh sover k'Rabbi Yishmael b'yachai. The other rabbi who said that they were set up to beginning face to face, he holds like the rabbi in Brachas. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says you should always be learning Torah constantly. Although that's not what they were doing then, but at least that should be the highest epitome of the goals. Okay. So what do you see? So that's the answer to the question. The question was, why weren't they looking straight on? The answer is, according to Rabbi Shmuel, who says that a Jew should conduct himself with the Torah and work ethic, so it's impossible to be 100% directed towards the Almighty. That's too much to expect from the masses. And therefore, there'll be a little bit turning the other way. And that is the way God wants it to be. That's the way God wants it to be. So that answers the question. Good? So there's still one more question. The other question is, if that's the case, so of course, the two cherubim. One cherub reflects the Jewish people. The other cherub reflects God, so what's the question?
Why God reflects
God? Yeah. Okay, so the cherub that is symbolic of the Jews is looking a little bit to the side. But God, isn't he looking straight on? One of the cherubim, it says both cherubim were facing to the side. So okay, the cherub, the female cherub which represents the Jews should be facing a little bit to the side. But the cherub which is the male cherub which reflects God should have been looking straight on, and it also wasn't. Okay, so that's a question still, bottom line. Ulechorot, it would appear, akati still, lama hutzuchu lahamid beis akruvim mitzudadim. Why would both cherubim have to be at an angle? Hello, is it not? Next page. Hakruva echad, one of the cherubim, sheramas lov yisbarach shmo, that is symbolic of God. Hayitzrichim lamida yasher mamish. They should have made that one facing straight on. So who knows the answer? Gina knows the answer. So that's the answer. Very good, very good. Okay, next paragraph. That's it. God can only look in the way we look. So I'm numb. However, the concept is kemoshe kasav. As we wrote, so you make me feel good. You're remembering things. Very good. Very good. It's like we wrote. Shehischabruso yisbarach kivyachol laholamos vakochas kulam. That the attachment that the Almighty has, as it were, to all the worlds and all the forces, v'chol sidre v'askashrusam, and all their structures and their associations, v'chein kol sidre hanahagosa yisbarach itano, and all of God's conduct with us as well, they all are based on what? Hu kefi shir hatnua v'yisoyrus hamagia leim imaseinu lemata. It's according to the movements and the awakenings and the arousals that reach to them from our actions down below. And according to that amount of what we do below, it goes down to us panim, soichakos, umuzboros, joyful faces towards us. Lachain, therefore, gam hakruv, sharamas, alav, yisbarach, shemo, also the kerub, which is symbolic of God, gam ken tzrichim lamido mitzudad ma'at, also have to be at an angle. Kefishir hatzidut shal hakruv, sharamas, aleinu, according to the amount of the moving to the side of the cherub that's symbolic of us, mizah hatam, for that very reason. Right, so that's how it comes out. That becomes the logic. Now the gloss says a very interesting point. He explains the Gemara in Shabbos, which is very interesting. He says, Valpiza, and according to this understanding, Yuvan Mamorim Zalba Perik test the Shabbos. In the ninth chapter of Tractate Shabbos, we can understand the following sentence. Amay Rabbi Chanina Bar Chama, he says, my dichsiv, what does it mean when it says in Song of Songs, when King Solomon says the following sentence? He says, Kitapuach Ba'atze Hayar. The verse over there says, like a apple in the trees of the field, etc., etc. So let me tell you the whole verse. So like this, like an apple in the fields, so is my beloved amongst the gods. In his shadow I lust and I want to sit in, and his fruits are very sweet to my palate. Okay, now who's talking about who in that verse? The Jewish people are talking about God. Right? That what? Like a fruit, like an apple in the forest, so is my beloved amongst the gods. In his shadow I lust to sit under, and from his sweet fruits I want to partake. So it's the Jewish people. The whole Shir Hashim is a love song which goes back and forth between God and the Jewish people and God. And there's a line that Jewish people are throwing out to God, saying, God is like the apple of the forest. Okay, that's the verse. Okay? So what does the Talmud do with that verse? So the Talmud says the following. Listen carefully. Lama nimshlu Yisrael letapuach. Why are the Jews compared to the apple? Just like an apple. That what happens? That the... usually with fruits, the foliage, the leaves come first, and then comes the fruit. The blossoms come first, then the blossoms go away, then comes the fruit. The apple is different. The apple comes first,
the flowers first.
No, usually in other ones. But here, the apple comes first, and then comes the leaf. Apple is different. The apple is different. The apple first, you don't see any of those blossoms. The apple grows, and once the apple grows, then the leaves come out. That's different. That's how it's different. So what are that? So the Jewish people, they did similarly. They said Nasa before Nishma. They said we will do before we will listen. So that's how the Jews are like an apple. Okay? So we got a problem with the Talmud? What's the proof? What's the proof? What's the problem?
Well, you said it was
What was the verse talking about?
God.
The verse that the Talmud is based on is saying God is like an apple. The Jewish people are saying God is like an apple. Talmud says, oh, see from that verse? You see, the Jewish people are compared to an apple. The Hikshu Tosvasham. The Tosvas asks.
They're reflecting.
No, it's different. That's different. Different one. In that verse, the Jews aren't compared to the apple. Ela HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just the Almighty is. Kidim Messiah, as the verse ends, Kain Dodi, Bein Habanim, so is my beloved between the various gods. So how could the Talmud say that we see from this verse that the Jewish people are compared to an apple when the verse is talking about how the Jewish people are expressing their understanding of God? So again, it's the same answer. And as I written, Yisyashiv Bez Hashem, it's understandable. Very interesting. Once the Jewish people began to understand God, and we could compare God to an apple. In other words, if we understood that God operates like an apple, okay, in a very loving way, right, in a very forward way that he produces before the foliage comes out, the production is right away. If the Jews could perceive that in God, what has to have happened? If they could perceive God's conduct in that way, what does that tell us?
That
the Jews were conducting themselves that way. If you could perceive God behaving in a certain way to you, by definition, if it's a correct perception, it means you are behaving to God that way, and God is just mirroring back that behavior. Vada, he would certainly machmash Yisrael. It must be the Jewish people. Nimshalim are comparable, umistamim are similar, b'masem with their actions, lina tapuach, to an apple as well. Ukaderach sha'anachmu, misroim lefanu yisbarach shemo, just as we appear to God, kach yisbarach shemo ba'le ro'os al halama, so does God appear to the various world. Al zeh ha'drog of Asher Mamash, to the exact level and measure. Lechein shol, therefore the Talmud asks, if the text says that we see God as an apple, the Gemara asks, in what way were the Jews comparable in their activities like an apple? Because that's the only way they could figure God acts like an apple. So that's what the Talmud says. If we can understand, if we see God acting in a certain way, and it's a correct identification, it's only mirroring back the way we behave. That's how the Talmud could use a verse where the Jews are calling God an apple, and the Talmud says, so how are the Jews acting like an apple?
But if it's according to level of measure, it doesn't even have to be a correct perception. Did I not hear you say that?
No, well, sometimes people can be just off. You can make mistakes.
I mean, we're talking about shira shira, so it's accurate.
So that's accurate.
But a level of measure.
No, the amount. But if, you know, if me and you think God's acting a certain, a lot of people think God is acting cruel. It might not be that way, right? You have to have an accurate assessment. But if we understand that God acts in a certain way to us, it's only because we've acted in such a way as well. Vilachain, therefore, be'ez kriyas yamsuf, at the time of the splitting of the sea, Amar hu yisbarach lemoshe. What does the Almighty say to Moshe? He's praying, God, got to do something. We're up against the wall here. So God says, Mati tzak elai, what are you screaming out to me? Daber b'nei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people. You saw them travel. Ratzel loimer, what did God mean to say to them? Dibidit hu tal yamilsa, that it all depends on you. Shim heima yivetokef amunav abitochon, if the Jewish people are at the ultimate epitome of trust and faith in God, and if they will go right into the sea, samuch libam lo yira, and the ones who they're putting their hearts to trust him and they're not afraid, so may otzam bitchonam, from the essence of their trust, shevada yikara lifneim, that the sea has to split before them. If they have such a feeling, next page, as what will happen, Yigrumu al Yadeza, it will cause through that faith in God, He's Eirus Lamala, an awakening above, Shiyas Lamanes, that God will do the miracle, Viyakara Lithneim, and it split before them. So the splitting of the sea was caused by the Jewish people's trust in God, which only then caused God to split the sea. So it wasn't God splitting the sea as much as it we caused God to split the sea. And that's why when they went in, it didn't split until they put the total faith, till it was over their heads. To go until your knees, I don't know if you totally believe yet. But let it go over your head. Then you put your total trust in God. That becomes the catalyst to let it split. Okay.
Putting your total trust in God on our day, wouldn't that kind of would you be asking for a miracle? I mean, you're often... Like if you have 100% trust in God, especially in a certain situation, aren't you kind of, and you're not doing the derechateva, so aren't you? Aren't you kind of asking for a miracle? Like, I mean, how do you know that?
You know, it depends who you are. It's all is a sliding scale. I'm reading this, it's a beautiful book now. Called Be'enei Hashem, in the eyes of God, and it has about 25 stories of divine providence for people who are living in Israel. I don't remember all the details. You know, you read it late at night. So one story really hit me, where this rabbi was going to the market. Elderly rabbi is going to the market. He's buying some tomatoes, and a student sees him, and he's a very esteemed rabbi. And he says, oh, what a chance to see him. I'll talk to him, get a little Torah from him. And they're talking as he's picking the tomatoes. And then the rabbi walks over to the checkout thing, and they're talking in Torah, you know. And the person weighs the tomatoes, and he kind of's waiting for his money, and they're talking in Torah, and they're talking in Torah. And they kind of get lost in the conversation, but the student kind of catches on that should be paid, and the Rebbe's so involved in the thing, so the student takes out whatever, a few shekel, and pays the guy. And they walk out. And then, I forgot all the details, it's better if I would remember all the points, but the main point is, what the student says, Rebbe, you might not have realized, but you were causing this clerk to waste time. He says, I realized, so why were you waiting? He says, I didn't have any money. So Rebbe, why did you go? My wife needed tomatoes. But how did you know someone's going to pay? He says, listen, that's God's problem. I need the tomatoes. God will take care of it. Okay, and he went in. He knew somehow it would have to get paid for. Yeah? Okay, you know, those are people who are living every second. Every second they're trusting God. It's not like only, you know, when they need to, they trust God. People like that, God takes care of them. To be on such a level is not easy. It's not easy to live every second that you feel every moment God is sustaining you. Okay, he had some stipend, whatever. I say there are people who do that. They have total trust. There's dozens of stories like that. If you're on that kind of a level, and the truth is, we all like to think we are, and we're so far away from it, we don't even understand how to approach it. But somebody who really lives that way, God doesn't let them starve. God doesn't let them starve. The Jewish people were able to demonstrate that when they went up against the city. You can't do that. I can't do that. Because we don't live that way 23 hours and 59 minutes a day. For 1 minute, you're going to trust in God. Psh, how do I know? You know, put on for show for a few minutes. You live your life this way. You attack it. God will take care of you. God isn't going to let anybody be wasted away like that. That it's all depending on how much you really, really trust God. And not just say it and mouth it. You know, to live it all the time. And that's when God does act that way. Yeah?
Was it all the people? I didn't think all the people did it. I thought it was...
It was one tribe. It was one tribe, Nachshon Ben Aminadab, whatever. It was in the merit of him, in the merit of the ones who trusted in God the most. So it split for them already. It was good enough for everybody else.
So the rest of the...
There's different midrashim on that. What?
The rest of the Jewish people just kind of...
The coattails.
Does it just take one, or does it have to...
Well, it's different opinions. It's different opinions. Sometimes even one. Sometimes one's enough. So, this is the driving force of trust in God. If you have such a trust in God, that means you have a very deep relationship in God. And the truth is, if you trust in God to give, this is what we're saying, God will give you whatever you trust in Him to give. Because the truth is, like in any relationship, the partners in a relationship respond to what the expectations is. Right? If you're married, you have your husband, wife, a good friend, right? No one wants to disappoint the other party that they love. And if you know your friend or your spouse really wants something badly, you don't disappoint them. If you really love them, you don't... Even if you don't really particularly want to do it. But if you know they really want it, so you don't want to disappoint them. So bitachon, trust in God, really means that you expect God to give. And you rely on that with a confidence. And if you really expect it, and you have such a close relationship with God, God doesn't want to let you down. God responds in kind. But if you live your own life most of the time, then it's a crisis. Oh, now I'm going to start trusting in God. God says you're full of baloney. You know, you go not respond to your spouse or to your friend for weeks on end. And then you're in trouble. And then you go to him and says, who are you? Okay? But somebody who constantly lives with God and is constantly trusting God, and you live that way, everything you do is reflected on that, God doesn't want to let you down. That's what you see, and that's what the Jewish people split the sea. Their trust in God is what split the sea. No one would have jumped in, the sea wouldn't have split. Wouldn't have split, and God could have split it if He wanted to. All right. And finally, the last paragraph, and this is also where it says in Song of Songs again, where it says like this, what's the whole nature of the splitting the sea as compared to what? It says like this, Lesusasi, compared to a horse, Berichve Paro, with Paro's armies of chariots. Dimisimsicha, I compare you to, God is comparing the Jewish people to the horses that led the chariots. Rayasi, my beloved. What's the comparison? God's love for us, he compares us to the horses that led the chariots of Paro's army into the Sea of Reeds. What's the comparison? What do I mean to say? Interesting. Kemo besuse Paro, the horses of Paro, was a miraculous thing what happened. Shayahepech min hago shalolam, was the opposite of normal. In other words, usually what happens is Sheharochev manig lesus. Usually it's the rider leads the horse. But as they started going into the sea, and they started seeing that the problems were coming, and the waters were caving in, and they wanted the horses to go the other way, Ubaparo v'chel, but by Paro and his officers, Hasus hinigas rochvo, the horse led the rider. Sus v'rochvo, Rama v'yom. Kiva sus Paro, the horse of Paro went in. What about Paro? And they, this way, no, the horse was leading the chariot, not the chariot leading the horse. That's the way it was. Kamo Shomer Razal said, Rabbi said, if that's the case, Kein di misicha, so do I compare you, the Jewish people, Vim Shalticha, and you are the parable, Rayasi, my beloved, Al Zeha Ofen Mamish, you are the same way, I have the same relationship with you. Sha'af Shani Rochev Aravos, even though I, God, I'm referred to as the one who rides on the highest heavens, Aravos is the name of the seventh heaven, the highest firmament. And then you go, I ride above that. That's what God says. Im kol zeh, but still not kiv yachl, as it were. At manhigo, see, you're the one that directs me. Al yidei masayich, through your actions. Shinin his chabrusi kiv yachl lomos, that the way I connect to the worlds, urakafi inin his arus masayich lanotim, depending on the direction that your actions lead me. So that's what God is saying. You are to me like the horse was to Paro's chariots. I'm like Paro, I'm like the chariots, and you're like the horse, you're leading me. This is what it says, Deuteronomy, Rochev Shemayim Besrecha. The Almighty rides the heavens. Now, the way we normally define Besrecha, it's hard to understand it, but in order to help you. But now he's saying, and learn it much simpler. Learn it much simpler. That God rides the heavens, Basrecha, with your help. With your help. Without your help, God couldn't ride on the heavens. V'chei Masha Amar Razal, as a rabbi said, Ho'avoda, the service of God, Tzarech Gavoa, is required by above. The Almighty can do nothing without the actions of what we are doing. So that concludes these two chapters over here. And it's very clear, this concept of how the Almighty's relationship with us as the cherubim depict is totally dependent on the way we reflect to God. Exactly the way we reflect to God, that's the way God's going to reflect back. So, just to bring back some ideas from the 8th chapter and bring a closure to all this over here. So, aside from the main idea over here of God's relationship to this world, and which reflects our relationship to God, we have to get back to the Parnassa issue. Back to the livelihood issue. What does, now you have the two opinions. You got Rav Shimon bar Yochai, he's the radical opinion. Shimon bar Yochai is the radical opinion. Learning Torah all your life. Right? And we say most people can't live that existence. Only very, very few people can live that existence. And those people should live that existence. Right? They should be living that existence. But most people, the will of God, it's like Rabbi Shmuel, the lenient opinion. Learn Torah with a job. But even according to Rav Shimon bar Yochai, going out for a living is, as we'd call, a bidi'evid. It's an after the fact. It's not the lechatchila. It's not the best possible meaning. It's not the best possible. What do we mean to say? Because even according to Rav Shmuel, that the masses should learn Torah and work. But does Rav Shmuel fool himself for 1 minute and say that the cherubic-like figures were facing each other directly, face-to-face, in King Solomon's time?
No.
He wasn't fooling himself. In terms of right and wrong for the masses, right and wrong for the masses, the Mishnah says you have to have Torah with Derech Eretz. But he didn't fool himself for a minute to think that the cherubic-like figures faced each other. Still in all, they were still sideways. Right? And you can't fool yourself into thinking that Torah with a lifestyle is the ultimate best situation for a person to find himself in. It's the correct situation for the way we as human beings live now. If you ask a rabbi or shiloh, what should I do? Should my son go out and make a living? He said, yes, that's the way it is. But we all have to agree, it's not the best situation. The best situation is that the cherubim should face each other completely. But in the context of life today, as it is today, we need a little bit of parnassa. Okay? And as we said last week, there are two reasons for needing parnassa. Number one, as it's the spiritual tests that are provided that enable our growth. And number two, to keep us away from idle time, from idle free time. But those two reasons to necessitate a livelihood are because people need that for a certain degree of development. That's what it's there for, as the Chovas HaVava said. So the whole gamut of parnasa, of a livelihood, it addresses certain flaws that are within man. Weaknesses that are in the human nature since the sin of Adam, right? And what we try to do through this work is maximize the person's development. But that's not the ideal situation. Because the cherubim don't look each other face on. The ideal situation is only to have a life of Torah. So now you're all wondering, so why does Reb Chaim spend so much time talking about it if it isn't practical? So what? So fine, they make us feel real bad now. The ideal is like Rishon Baruch Hai. We're going to be like Rishmo. But you should know, as somebody in the Monday class, how does the expression he used a good expression when he asked me a question. He says, are we just muddling by? Are all of us Rabbi Shmuelites just muddling by life? That was a very, very good way to express the idea. We're muddling by, and we're not really hitting the top. The top is people are in Kolel, they dedicate their lives to Torah, that's a Rabbi Shimon Bar Chai life. And we're Nebuch, we're the Rabbi Shmuel types of the world. The 99%, we couldn't make it to the top, right? So why do we got to talk about all this? If that's how we are, what do you got to get? Let me finish the point, then we'll get. So what's the practicality of it all? So the answer is, what he's trying to bring out from all this, and I don't even think it's so subtle. He says, it depends what our attitude towards making a living is. That's what's critical. You're going to make a living, but what we learn from this is, what's our attitude? Do we kill ourselves to make a living? To make over the amounts that we need to make? So that, we're being told, is wrong. If we make a living a career, is this your career? My career goals is to become the chief executive officer of the Coca-Cola company in 15 years, or to have my own thriving multi-million dollar business. That's my career goal. Make it up the corporate ladder. This is my career, right? So what we're learning from Rabbi Shmuel, the way Rabbi Chaim is explaining, is that to the degree that we must face a way to make a living, so we have to face a way, because that's the context of our challenge of life. You know, that's what we need to develop from. But only to the degree that it's my parnasa, that I need it. But once it goes beyond the degree of necessity, then the person should be looking away from his career. Okay? Rabbi Yishmael says clearly, right, that to the degree that the person is involved in making a living, you're not totally facing the cherubim one to the other. Right? So to that degree that the parnassah is a reality of my life, and it has to be a reality, and I have to make a living, and I have to live, and I have to face a way to a certain degree, fine. But the degree that the parnassah does not have to be a reality of my life, it shouldn't be. That's the point. Let me finish what I'm saying. Let me get the whole idea. Okay. And then we'll get it all out, then I'll take all the questions. So the question then is, so how do we determine what is parnasa? What is a necessary parnasa? So the truth is, only to the degree that a person needs to live. To the degree that you need to live. But if a person puts away a second job and lots of money because he says, who knows what's going to happen 10 years down the line? That kind of talk, right? above the or buying things that are above the necessities of life, that's not within Rabbi Shmuel's parameters. Buying the color TV is not in his parameters. Okay, there's a whole discussion about that. Rav Moshe has a tshuva on that. He says that's permitted. So that's permitted because you're obligated to take care of your wife. A man has to buy insurance. A woman doesn't. A woman does not. If the woman is the breadwinner, she doesn't have to buy insurance. Rav Moshe goes through a whole intricate Talmud piece when a man marries a woman, he's obligated to take care of the woman. It's his obligation. Even after death, the husband is obligated to take care of the wife. And therefore, this is a natural thing that happens. It's not an unusual thing that husbands die before wives, and the wives have to be taken care of. And that's not considered a lack of trust in God for the Rabbi Shmuel people of the world. And we're not living beyond Rabbi Shmuel's existence. Okay, now, how much insurance you buy is another question. You don't have to buy $10 million of insurance. You know, $1 million is enough. You know, you buy a reasonable amount of insurance. You don't have to die. If I die, oh dear, you're going to have it wonderful. You know, you buy what's necessary, but not more than that. And true, people who totally, the rabbi in the story buying the tomatoes, I'm sure didn't have insurance either, right? But to the degree that it's not necessary to face away, you should be concentrating on trying to face each other. So even though this whole discussion here, we're not assuming and expecting that any one of your husbands or yourselves should be quitting your jobs and not working and say, I'm going to go and sit in kolam now for the rest of my life. No one's suggesting that at all. But so what's it relating to? You have to get in your heads, what is your attitude to making a living? Right? You have to do it. You have to do it in the context of your development. It's necessary for your existence, but work is only necessary in that context. Work is not necessary as a goal in and of itself. That's the point. Where a person is measured in terms of how much money you have, that's what kind of success you have. That is the problem. What Reb Chaim is saying is don't be fooled by the Western lifestyle. That's what he's telling you. You can both go to work, but if the Western person says, go to work and make a success out of yourself. And why you go to work is because you make money, because money means who you are. Power and clout. And now you made it. And you're a success in Western eyes. The Torah says you go out to work because it's the context of your spiritual challenge. You have to live. But it's not my career.
But now we have the two tribes and one supports the other.
It still wasn't his career. He only did it because he wanted the other guy to learn. That it was the only justification, and not more than that. And even then, they were learning a ton. Even the other tribe was learning a ton.
Well, okay. What you're saying here, let's just pretend.
Okay, now we'll open up. Put the gloves on. Let's go.
You have one.
I've been giving this class like four times this week on this topic. This topic, I happen to be. So I'm ready. Go ahead.
You have one apartment building, which gives you enough money to survive and
you own the apartment building.
You own the apartment building.
Doing enough good. Money. What part of town?
Wherever. Yeah. Could you stop? Not buy the second one?
You have enough money to get by?
Yeah.
You should stop.
So what about if you can give tzedakah?
So I shouldn't.
That's not your problem. That's God's problem. What about try to get more, be richer? I give tzedakah. That's not your problem. That's God's problem. God told me what I have to do. What do I have to do? I have to dedicate myself to look to God. I have to make what I need to make. Sources of charity, there's no shortages of charity. It can come in many ways. It can come in many ways. Herod rebuilt the second temple. It can come in many ways. It'll come. The government, how do you think we made it through Kollel? Food stamps, HUD, WIC, all the government programs, that's how a lot of people made it. What do you think the programs were for? It's for the poor people in the inner city? Crazy, it's for the Kollel people, they could sit and learn. What do you mean, for the few years that they have to study? You need to have a rich father-in-law. You have Uncle Sam. He's a rich uncle, too.
But I think that synagogue just down the street there wouldn't have been built if somebody had been content with one building. think you want to do your very best.
He happened to be the vehicle. If he wouldn't have been there, there'd be another vehicle.
Going back to the apartment building, how do you know, for instance, if
it's not, see, that person, see, the problem, Alan, is you want to play God here. Not you, but this kind of mindset is how the Jews will have this, how Jews will have that. That's not your problem. You got to first do what you got to do. Let God worry about the rest of the people.
No, I'm worried about that's what I have to do.
So what God says is you have to have an intense relationship with God. That's what you, that's what God wants you to do. And to help any other Jew. And it doesn't have to be that it has to be with money. It doesn't have to be with money. You know what? You don't need beautiful buildings. Nowhere in the Torah is it a mitzvah to build a shul. It's not one of the 613 mitzvahs. You don't need a shul. You need one temple, which there was plenty of funds for, and no one had to work for it. They didn't have to have a building campaign. Okay? And outside that, there were no shuls. No shuls. If there be no shul over there, who says you need a shul over there?
Because they don't have
money. Who says you need it? You don't think I could have a shtiebel in my house or in your house? Or in an apartment building? You can't do that? And you can't become close to God there? In Europe, you know what? Generally speaking, in the European cities, there's one big shul that the whole community was taxed on, the Jewish community, to pay for. If every Jew in Toronto gave a minimal donation of a beautiful shul in Toronto. Yeah? And then everybody had a little shtiebel. Around the court, a little shtiebel. You have an apartment, you have an extra room. We'll daven in your room over here. And then on holidays, they come together. Whatever. You don't have to have a shul. You don't have to have a shul.
Have a class like this?
Yeah, go to my house. Come to my house. You don't think I didn't give classes in my house for many years in Toronto? You have to have the beautiful building. It can come in many ways. You know, but you don't have to feel when you are going out to make a life for yourself. They say, I have to make all the money to support the Jewish people. Nowhere does it say you have to come with that game plan. Now, if there are people who have not, you know, had a focus like this, and they happen to have a lot of money, so if they happen to have the money already, so already, might as well make his life worth something.
I wasn't thinking about it in a generous sense. I was just thinking about it more in a sense of doing the best you can do, whatever it is that you're doing, and still maintaining a relationship with God.
So the question is, how do you know what's the best thing you should be able to do? Until you've tried them all. Until you've tried them all. Right? That's the question. And a lot depends. Look, for... I.